this is the Fun Food and Fitness Podcast, where I have real conversations about how people navigate BS and establish a healthy relationship with food, exercise, and their bodies. Hi, and welcome to the Fun Food and Fitness Podcast. My name is Emma Green. I'm an online fitness coach and freelance writer. And today I'm really excited to be speaking with Steve Hall, who is an online coach himself. He's also a competitive bodybuilder, a podcast host, and also a self-confessed pizza fanatic. And today we'll be talking a bit about Steve's kind of background, how we got into fitness, and how that's kind of informed not only his own kind of mindset today in terms of nutrition and training, but also the way that he works with clients. So yeah, welcome Steve.
Thank you very much for having me on. I appreciate it. It's always fun to not be the host and actually talk a little bit more sometimes.
Yeah, well, exactly. I bet, yeah, boots on the other foot, right? Yeah, so was there anything of your, obviously intro, my very brief intro I gave of you, was there anything else that you wanted to say about you?
No, I don't think so. I think you covered it pretty well. That's literally my life now, is training for bodybuilding, doing client work, content creation, and then eating pizza. That is literally my life.
Living the dream.
Coffee there. Yeah.
And I mean, obviously what, you know, I think it's great is that, you know, obviously your content is kind of really evidence-based, but you also kind of blend, you know, sort of personal experience and things there as well. And I think that you do a really good job of like meshing the two, which I think is actually quite difficult. But yeah.
I appreciate that.
No, of course. So yes, just to start with, I wonder if you could just kind of, give about the kind of history of how you sort of got into, fitness and sort of where you are today.
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess, I don't know how far back to take it all the time, but I guess I've always been interested in kind of sports, and I was an active child, so I think people, they're either really inactive as a child or like really into sports and things, and I was always that person who was massively into it. So I was never one of the kind of, maybe like, more, being overweight was never an issue for me. It was more so like I was on the skinny side big time, and I was just always doing something. And I only really got into like lifting with weights, when I say only, when I was, I think, almost 15 years old. No, yeah, 15 years old. I was going on 16, and I kind of just saw some of my friends going, and it was just kind of like a bit of fun. But nothing really got serious until I was at university, and it was unfortunate that I was hit by a van during the time. I skipped quite a lot of time there, but just a background of I was always sporty is all you really need to know. I never took like it any further, so I didn't do like GCSE, PE even. I didn't do my university study wasn't in like sports science or anything like that. It was kind of a side passion, and it was something maybe I wanted to be more. For example, like PE, I never did it at GCSE because I was actually bullied, and a lot of the bullies, as probably a lot of listeners know, tend to be the people that are quite good at sport. They're kind of like, I don't know, jocks is like the American term for it, but I don't know what you'd call it here. So I avoided taking that subject literally because I couldn't have gone and done it well because I was just so underconfident with it. So anyway, I went to university, studied something that wasn't anything to do with it, any of what I do now, really, apart from maybe a bit of the business side. I did geography of business. And during my second year, as I was saying, I unfortunately did get hit by a van, which sounds horrific and terrible. And it kind of was in many ways, but I look back at it, and when I say it, it sounds scarier than what it was in my head. But I was just being active at university, and this was one of my typical runs that I would go on, and it was at a crossing, and I remember being on for an all-time personal best on this like 10-kilometer run. I used to be really into my running as well at this time. I had like a Garmin watch with like the heart rate monitor around my waist, around my chest even, and I had the whole get-up. I was really into it, and you could like set up to run against your shadow or something, or on like previous runs that you'd done before. And I can remember seeing that I was ahead just, and so I was just like, I'm just going. And unfortunately, there was the van that then hit me, and I ended up in hospital for about a month. Initially, it wasn't clear that anything particularly was wrong. I had scarring, I had a fractured skull, I was let out of, I was almost going to say let out of prison, let out of hospital. It did kind of feel like a prison at times, but yeah. Let out of hospital after a couple of days, and then went home, and I kind of ended up one evening just massively vomiting and sweating, and just, it was one really scary experience. My parents took me to A&E, and I then was in hospital there for about a month at my local hospital in Luton, and then it was just a case of, like, it was clear there was something very wrong, and it seems to have been a bruised pituitary gland, and that just has many impacts on different hormones, and the biggest one for me was kind of electrolyte control, and I was just in a position where my sodium levels were just way too low, and so they couldn't release me because I was at risk of potentially seizuring at particular times, and it just made me not function well as a human being. I remember being in hospital and wanting to revise for my exams at university, and I couldn't concentrate. I couldn't even concentrate watching TV. I don't even know where the days or the times passed. Really weird thinking what I do now, like squatting heavy, like going to the gym and doing lots. And there was times at which I couldn't even get out of bed to like walk to the toilet. I couldn't do that physically, which is scary but really exciting at the same time for me when I think back to it now that I've overcome it. So yeah, this all kind of happened, and the way Revive Stronger grew was basically after the accident, a way for me to kind of gain control, gain confidence in myself, was to build myself back up. And this is when I kind of got into bodybuilding and probably what we would call the bro science of bodybuilding now, kind of all the kind of wrong things in some ways, but there was many right things still there. I was eating plenty of food, thousands upon thousands of calories. I was literally looking to gain like half a stone every week would be like, that'd be good progress. I was obviously gaining back quite a lot of the weight that I'd lost during my time in hospital, because I literally had lost anything I had previously built beforehand, which wasn't anything to shout about, but I'd lost about 2 stone whilst I was in hospital. So that was kind of, yeah, where it all began, and it was a way to build back my confidence. And ever since that's happened, when I still kind of finished off university, I got a 2-1, which I was happy enough about. I kind of was a bit glad that I didn't get first, but considering things, and I was told to take a gap year, I was kind of proud of just being able to kind of have that fortitude to get through it all. And then, yeah, after university, it was office jobs and things like this, and it never kind of lit my passion, and I was always kind of at work trying to listen to like YouTube videos from like 3DMJ and try and like learn on the side, reading Lyle McDonald's website on the way, kind of on my commute, and I was obsessed with it. And so I finally decided to kind of learn and become a personal trainer part-time, and then I transitioned to actually working at my local gym. Which was fortunate that they had a position that opened there, and I started doing that alongside also looking to start my first bodybuilding prep in 2014. And they kind of coincided to somehow develop an online presence. Like I was on YouTube a bit, I was blogging a bit, Instagram a little bit, and a lot of the people in my local gym were kind of seeing me do bits and were kind of interested in what I was doing. And I ended up coaching them kind of online as such. It was kind of online, but it was more so just programming because I'd see them in person. But got tremendous results with some of those guys, and I just started documenting it. And the online side kind of grew. And this is there when I had to take a kind of risk again to move into London with my girlfriend now, Charlotte. And I always say girlfriend now, and I realize I need to not say that. Charlotte, my girlfriend. Not
sorry
now.
Charlotte,
she is my girlfriend, it has been for years. I doubt she'd listen to this, but I've done it before. I think it was on my own podcast, and she was like, why did you say now? I took the plunge, and I just started plowing everything into like content creation. I used to do lots of blog writing, and just doing bits like this, and ever since then, that's where kind of just continued to grow, then started different content production, like Instagram's now here, there's loads of podcasts now, and that's where Revive Stronger came from. So that's kind of the backstory, and that's why it's named Revive Stronger. I'm not sure how many people really realize that that is the backbone of the name, but it's kind of, yeah, thinking about your body and how far it can actually go and how amazing it is, and using the tools appropriately, you can get there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, hopefully that was an okay backstory.
No, that was...
I feel like there's a lot there.
No, there is a lot there, but no, that was amazing. And I think it's really nice that you've kind of shown actually that, you know, Revive Stronger does have a real meaning behind it. And I think also that, you know, for the gym and kind of, you know, or fitness in general for a lot of people, it does actually have a deeper meaning. I think sometimes people think, oh, building muscle, it's really superficial. Do you know what I mean? And I think it's really nice that you've so clearly articulated that actually this was... you know, as much about kind of building yourself up kind of mentally as physically. So yeah, no, I think that was really a really good overview. And so obviously you said kind of before your, you know, accident and things, you sort of were kind of into the gym a bit, but didn't kind of take it that seriously. And I guess I was wondering, do you think that you perhaps would have taken it more seriously had it not been for your accident? Or do you think that actually almost you needed that kind of shock to the system, literally, to perhaps, you know, change the way you approach fitness?
That's a really cool question. No one's ever asked me that before. So that, yeah, it's interesting because absolutely I needed that accident to sort me out, because I was doing everything wrong. I was trying to do everything. I was trying to always be losing fat, always trying to build muscle, and so I was just starving myself. Like, I wasn't starving myself, I was eating, and I didn't have any kind of disordered eating behaviors or anything, but I was just like giving myself the minimum I could to try and get the maximum out of everything. So I was at university doing kind of rowing club, I was doing running club, I was playing, trying to play football in that football team as well, and then I'd be doing like high intensity interval training, and I'd be doing the gym every single day almost, and I just, it was just nothing, I was just completely stagnating and not improving, but putting in so much effort. I just had no understanding of what I was really doing. So it was only then having the accident which made me think of more about what I was doing and like how that really wasn't getting me very far. And also, because of how the accident happened, I didn't really have the confidence to go and do the different sports and do the running. And I lost interest in those areas just because of, I think just because it was, I was isolating myself because I just no longer felt very confident just in life in general. And I didn't feel very fit and well in myself. And I knew I wouldn't be able to perform in any way. So, yeah, it was... I needed the accident to give me that specific focus towards kind of building myself up before I would allow myself to go into other areas. And it just happened. I really got a passion for bodybuilding.
Yeah, yeah. No, and I think that's amazing. And I think, you know, often that is something that I think happens, you know, obviously not necessarily to that extreme, but for a lot of people, they almost kind of need this, like, kick in the ass, right? To sometimes, yeah, you know, change their mindset. I mean, in the research literature they talk about it as like positive growth, which I think was originally from actually breast cancer survivors, but it's the same idea, right? It's you go through something obviously hugely, you know, traumatic mentally, you know, physically or whatever, and actually that's a kind of a positive springboard, you know, going forwards. So yeah, I think, you know, it's good to yeah, to kind of, I think, you know, remind people of that, you know, that if they're going through something difficult, although, like, obviously it sucks at the time, actually something really positive can come out of that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, it makes you stronger as a person, I think, a lot of the time.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. And I think able to kind of relate to people that, you know, have also had their own kind of struggles.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, obviously, you know, you're... kind of a coach now, and I just wondered if there's anything you feel kind of maybe something you've developed in your own sort of mindset or whatever that is something that you are kind of really keen to kind of work on with you know, with clients.
So I think a lot of the time the people I work with, especially now, are very clued up. They know a lot almost to their detriment at times. So I don't work with a lot of kind of general population people. It's more so, I think I need to actually have a look, but I might work with like 75% of the people I have are coaches themselves. And so it's almost saving them from themselves and saving them from getting into the minutiae of data and knowing that an action to take yourself forward doesn't need to be a perfect action, and you're never going to get that perfect action. Kind of that optimization is the pie in the sky. You're never really going to get optimal, and better to get close to it and keep moving and analyzing and assessing and like changing if necessary, rather than not taking a step forward at all. That's the common issue I find with the people I work with. Are they almost, yeah, know too much, and that they don't consistently move in one direction because they're almost overthinking things, changing things too frequently. So I try to get people into a mindset of taking a step forward, even if it's not 100% perfect or precise, which you're never going to get, is better than taking none at all. And trusting the process, I think, is a huge, massive thing for, again, in Gen Pop, that's a huge thing as well. And understanding the entire process and the kind of the bigger picture, I guess, would be the thing I try and instill in my clients. And then once they have that and they've done that process for months on end, they don't need to trust the process anymore because they just do it. And then they're ready to oftentimes go and do it on their own, which is fantastic.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think that's always a sign of, you know, a really good coach is actually when you can kind of give clients, you know, a kind of toolkit that they can then go off and, you know, use their own. And full transparency for the listeners, I was a client of Steve's for a long time, so I can vouch for the fact that he is, you know, a fantastic coach and absolutely does definitely deliver that. So, yeah. And I was wondering, in terms of, you know, your own training and kind of being a coach, I wonder if and you know, obviously with social media and things like that, whether you feel a kind of pressure in some ways with the way that you approach you know, your kind of fitness and nutrition.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And on a side note, I don't know whether it's appropriate to say it now, but it's been amazing to see Emma evolve as, like, just now you're a coach yourself. You're well and truly a fledged, like, fitness professional, which is amazing, because when we first started working together, it was kind of like a dream for you. So yeah. I'm really proud of the fact that you're now doing it. So that's really cool. I just wanted
to
say
you. Thank you.
So, yeah, in terms of a bit of pressure on myself, I think absolutely, because people always have their kind of methods and their methodologies, and I don't necessarily, if I really think about it, I shouldn't have this pressure on myself, but sometimes I think I'm kind of a poster boy for what I promote, and kind of I'm a bit of a poster boy, I guess, for evidence-based practice and the methodologies that I provide to my clients and to myself. And so if I'm not getting really good results, if I'm not performing well, maybe at shows, then I worry that people would look and be like, why would I listen to this person? Because they don't practice what they preach. And I know this is the wrong thing to think, but I don't necessarily know whether that is what people think on the outside looking in, because obviously we know that there's much more to it than, like, you could be following the best method possible for you, and you might just not get the results that other people do because of your genetics or your environment doesn't allow for it. So there's a lot that goes into it, but I do feel a pressure to kind of progress and be a certain way. But in many ways, I think I always like the term pressure builds diamonds. Ooh. So I do feel like it does push me in the right direction, because everything that the pressure I put on, like, I think a lot of the pressure I probably put on myself, and it's not placed by them. But a lot of the time, it's pressure that's appropriate for what I want anyway, so I don't mind it so much. But there is definitely a pressure I think it's more, I don't know if that was the question specifically, kind of like the results you get or the way you look, or just a pressure in terms of like keeping up with, because that's a different story, I guess, keeping up with answering questions and kind of being up to date and that sort of thing. That's a kind of different pressure, which again, I think is a good thing for the most part.
Yeah. And no, I think you're right. I think there's, I don't know. I think we often think about things in binary terms, right? We think, oh, pressure, bad, you know? And I think you've, you know, brilliantly articulated there actually how kind of pressure actually can be a kind of positive thing in a way that it kind of keeps you, you know, focused and on track, you know, like compared to when you were saying, you know, when you're at uni and you're trying to do a million things, you know, and you're kind of jack of all trades, master of none, right? So, you know, I think, yeah, sometimes it's, I guess it's a balance, isn't it, right? You wouldn't want the pressure to become obviously too much, but it sounds like because you're almost very mindful of it, that actually it perhaps wouldn't become, you know, unmanageable.
Yeah, I think it can make or break people. I think some people, the pressure gets to them so much so that they give into it and they almost self-sabotage. So they could be something pretty good, but because they feel like there's a lot of pressure to be something pretty good, then they're just like, well, I'm just going to fall for it. I'm just going to, I don't know, not stick to my diet. I'm not going to kind of be the best me I can be. So I think, yeah, I think you're right in that. A lot of the time people do just view it negative. Like, you can take it, I think taking it the right way is kind of a good thing, obviously, but I think some people can take it the wrong way.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. And I think I see that mindset in people where it's like they'd almost rather not actually try than try and fail. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think, you know, no one likes failing, right? It sucks. But actually, you need to be willing to potentially, you know, fail to actually be able to kind of make, you know, make progress.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah. And you mentioned obviously about, you know, kind of competing and things like that. And you said your first show was it 2014? Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I was just wondering about kind of what motivated you to decide that you wanted to kind of get on stage.
Cool. Yeah. No. Brilliant question, because I think I was I'm fortunate to have one of probably the strongest whys a competitor can have to get on stage. I think a lot of people have good rock whys, but now that more people are competing, more people are doing it for maybe just the experience or just because their friends did it or something like that, which isn't necessarily wrong or anything, but it can make it maybe more difficult at times when you haven't got that strong reason for it. So it was something when I was learning about how to build muscle and get better, I found 3D Muscle Journey, who I referenced before, and they were they're natural bodybuilders, natural pros, and this really excited me, and I was like, well, that's the next level, really. I put in the work in the gym and everything, and the next stage would be getting onto stage, and so I was like, well, that's a really extreme thing to do, especially because of kind of things that happen to you when you get to stage. You put your body in a really kind of bad state, essentially, and so this was very worrisome for like my family. They thought my mum certainly did not want me to get to those kind of extreme levels of body fat. Part of the things I suffered from with my accident was low testosterone, and obviously this is this happens if you're going to get into stage condition for a male. You're just going to get those really low body testosterone levels. So it was kind of like almost a bit of a silly thing to do, because I wasn't ignorant to the fact that my testosterone was going to go down, but I didn't know that it would come back up. So anyway, the reason I really wanted to do it was to not necessarily prove to myself, well, I guess it was actually to prove to myself that I was fully recovered from the accident that happened to me, that I could go do something incredibly extreme to my body and it could recover and I could keep going and compete in future years, which I have. And it could have all gone wrong, but I'm so glad it didn't, obviously.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was my reason for it.
Yeah. And it's like we were saying before, right? It's that putting all your effort into something and being willing almost to actually, you know, not kind of go well or whatever. And obviously, you know, obviously it did, which is great. But I think, yeah. And I think you made a really good point when you were saying about kind of competing and kind of what's involved with it. Because I think certainly I feel in the fitness industry, it's only fairly recently that actually perhaps realised the kind of scale of what happens to you kind of mentally or physically as either a, you know, man or a woman, really, when you do compete. You know, and I think, I mean, it's a balance, right? Because I've seen a lot of people kind of bashing competing, and I think, you know, I'm I'm certainly of the mindset that, you know, if you want to get on stage, absolutely go for it. But just know, you know what's involved. And, you know, I'm sure that's obviously something that you kind of, you know, communicate with clients that come to you with those goals. I was wondering if you, with kind of clients, are there clients that are kind of really keen to compete and you say no, like you're not ready for whatever reason?
Yeah, a lot of the time, this unfortunately does happen. It's hard because, especially because I want to get into coaching more competitors. That is something that we're trying to get more as a brand, is to kind of be more known for coaching competitors. And so when we do get approached by people that are seeking to do that, it's always tempting to be like, yeah, of course we can get you to stage. But there is several occasions where I have had to turn people down, and whether or not they've gone to other coaches, but most of the time they stick and they come and they kind of, we build towards eventually competing. And normally it's because they aren't in a position to really go through something that extreme, whether they're in a position where their body fat is kind of quite high and so they can't just compete this season, or they're in a position where they've been competing before, maybe multiple seasons beforehand, or been dieting. There's a lot of people that are kind of perpetually in a state of like either dieting or kind of recovering from a diet but never fully recovering, and unfortunately I've had to turn down female competitors for this exact reason, where they are just not in a healthy position. Maybe they don't have their period at the moment, where they haven't allowed it to come back, and they're trying to then compete again, and they're on low calories, doing lots of cardio already. And whether or not it is a case of only losing 10 pounds, which they might actually be able to do and might be able to compete, I'm not willing to make their health worse just for the sake of getting a competitor to stage. And it's not just their physical health, as we mentioned, it's their mental health that's going to go down as well. And a lot of the time people are very receptive to, when you explain it to them, the kind of negatives versus the positives and how it's just not worth it. And I think the best thing to always say is, like, you want to bring your all-time best physique to stage. You can't do that in the position you're in currently. So let's kind of take a step off the gas, and the stage will always be there. You can compete in future years. So, yeah, I've absolutely had to kind of either turn people down or kind of bring them on and go through a bit more of an off season to build them up before we can build them back down, or not build them down, take them back down.
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I think you made it, you know, definitely something I've noticed as well in terms of kind of females. I think having that kind of history, even if you don't have an interest in competing, that kind of chronic dieting history where it's kind of, you know, yeah, diet, have a little bit of a break, back on a diet, you know, and, you know, for years often, I think. And it's, you know, I think, yeah, it's, I mean, I think it's just fantastic that you have that kind of, you know, difficult but important conversation, you know, with clients. And, you know, I mean, I think the ones that aren't receptive in a way, like, that probably wasn't going to be a great fit as a coach-client relationship anyway, right? If they're not listening to you from the get-go, like, that's not, you know, probably not the right fit. So I think that's fantastic. And I think that, you know, I would hope, you know, all coaches kind of have that, but I think there are some that, you know, potentially would, you know, take the money, right, and just, you know, starve people to stage or whatever. So I think that's great. And, you know, hopefully helps, you know, your clients have this kind of longevity, you know, in the sport as well. Yeah, because I know you take obviously quite a long time between your shows, don't you?
Yeah, so I didn't compete. I competed in 2014 and then I didn't compete till last year. So that was, yeah, 3 years. And I probably won't compete again till 2020. And I just think it's, especially, I don't know if it's the right term to say, kind of give your body respect, because you've only got one, and to really keep hammering it kind of year after year, or I mean, even a year off season sometimes wouldn't be completely enough. And it's not even just your physical body or your mental body, it's also everyone around you. If you do have like a girlfriend, boyfriend, wife, husband, a business, clients, they all suffer to a degree, unfortunately. Like, yeah. Even if you try your best, they do get put on the back burner slightly. So I don't necessarily say everyone has to take like 2-3 years off or anything, but I think giving yourself at least kind of just competing season to season for anyone who isn't kind of at the peak of their career, it doesn't make sense to me, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, yeah, like you said, you know, kind of mentally and physically, you need that kind of time away from, you know, away from the stage. So, yeah, and I think, again, you know, like I was saying, I think there is more coming out now about kind of competing and how to kind of do it right, you know, because I think, you know, there was definitely a kind of idea that, oh, you know, you can just almost compete, you know, if you're doing flexible dieting, right, you can just, you know, carry on competing. And I know, I don't think so much in the UK, but in America, I think the way that the shows are set up there, actually, people can end up competing actually several times, even within the same year, you know, so staying at that kind of near stage condition for, you know, actually extended periods of time as well, which obviously isn't optimal.
Yeah, it's actually a really, I've only really thought about it since this season, being competitive in that you can qualify quite early in the season if you're not necessarily not careful, but you can qualify quite early and then many months later could be the finals. And so you either need to qualify and not be fully ready yet so that you can still keep leaning out as you get towards finals. But if you're in your best nick early on and you qualify, it's like, how do you actually sustain that, because that is a physique that you don't want to sustain. And then there's people who might be doing that, and they might have got to that level after being maybe, I don't know, for a male, like in the high teens body fat, or for a female in the high, like late 20s. And then they have to try and kind of continue that further. It's kind of, there's a bit of chess almost to playing your cards right and not dieting for too long. That's something I definitely learned versus to my 2014 prep to my 2017, was the biggest difference was the length. I was dieting from like January to the end of September in 2014 and lost over 30 pounds. Whereas this time around, it was like half that and less than half the body weight as well. With diet breaks, it was night and day how I felt and the look that I managed to bring. So yeah, there's so much more information out there now, which is amazing. Even since 2014, so.
Yeah, no, I think that's great, because now, you know, I think we just know more and more about how to actually do it kind of optimally, you know, mentally and physically. And I think I see that trend only kind of continuing in the future. Now we're actually getting more kind of funding for research on bodybuilders and stuff like that, which is really cool. So I think that evidence base is only going to continue to grow. I was just wondering, is there anything you feel that kind of you perhaps learned from competing? I mean, obviously there's a huge amount that goes into it, right? It's really not just, you know, putting on some trunks and tanning up, right? It's, you know, there's a huge amount that goes into, you know, the prep, but also just how you present yourself on stage. So yeah, is there anything particularly that you feel that you've got from competing?
It's an interesting question, because I definitely feel like I have. The weird thing is, when I think about it, I think a lot of the skills that you need to do well in the sport, you've actually already got. Mm. And I don't necessarily think the sport gives you those skills, or I don't know if it's a sport, but I don't think competing necessarily gives you those skills. Maybe it highlights that you've got them, or maybe highlights you haven't got them. Mm. So I do think kind of a lot of the, yeah, the best bodybuilders, they just have that kind of, they develop them maybe further when they compete, but I'm not sure that they necessarily get them as new things. Mm. It gave me more respect for kind of, yeah, energy intake and the power of food, kind of even when you have like a diet break, or even just like a higher calorie single day, the way the body can dramatically change, not even the look, but also how you feel is just incredible. And also how you can become just over, like just how powerful food is. You literally, in the last, like when you are in that condition in the last few weeks, you're obsessed. You're obsessed with looking at food, trying out different foods, all of these things. And I guess we know this because of the Minnesota starvation study.
Yeah.
But it's one thing to do it and kind of experience that, and another thing to kind of read about it, because even having done it, and in hindsight, I can recognize a lot of the unhealthy habits that I had. But whilst doing it, you're kind of ignorant to it. You're ignorant to the fact that you're maybe moody and that you're being really kind of lethargic and really kind of tired all the time, and you're doing weird things with your food, like chopping it up into tiny little pieces and trying to extend the meal out as long as possible. And it takes a while also to transition out of those habits. I know, and I think part of that is probably a positive thing if you can transition slowly, but it does just take time. So this is part of the recovery process that a lot of people don't realize, is that they hold on to a lot of the things that they do during prep, which I think is fine to a point. But if you're trying to compete again, you're still using a lot of your prep tactics, like, for me, massive salads, like five times cooking your oats, like really volumizing foods and take your time over things. That's quite unhealthy. So yeah, really, every single time I compete, I learn new things about the body and the extremes you can take it to. And yeah, just tiny things, but big kind of personal skills I've developed. I don't feel like they were necessarily built by bodybuilding, but maybe kind of bolstered by it, or kind of furthered and emphasized and maybe recognize them. But I think if you're going to be successful in these kind of physique sports, you kind of need to have those traits already. And I don't think bodybuilding is going to give them to you, or physique sports going to give them to you.
No, I think that's a great point. It's like, it's always like an avenue. And I think, like, say for me, I can relate that to like doing a PhD, right? Like, it's, if you don't have a good work ethic, you're not getting through those 4 years. Like, you're not, you know what I mean? And it's, you know, I guess the same with, you know, with bodybuilding, with the kind of all the, you know, effort that you're putting towards it and things like that as well. So I think, I think, like you said, maybe it's almost like a test of character, I guess, in a way. Yeah, and you made, I think, such a good point about actually transitioning out of it as well, that which I think actually for a lot of people is something they struggle more than actually the prep, right? When they know they're getting on stage in, you know, a bikini or, you know, like little, you know, like a thong basically, you know, that's a big driver, right? But actually after the show, it can be difficult to, you know, to transition out of those habits. And since you know, like on average from the literature, say with someone that has an eating disorder, on average, it takes them 6 years to recover. And obviously, I'm not saying that competing is an eating disorder, right? But like we said, some of the habits are the same kind of things that you develop, right? Whether you're doing it, you know, for the stage, or, you know, because you're, you know, you're struggling, you know, with an eating disorder. It looks from the outside similar, doesn't it? So it just made me think when you said, oh, it takes a long time. I thought, well, if it takes 6 years, and that's obviously someone that's, you know, obviously mentally, you know, in a worse place or whatever, but... But, you know, that's a huge amount of time, isn't it? So,
yeah, that doesn't surprise me, though, hearing that. But it's crazy to think it's 6 years, but I think that doesn't surprise me. And I think it's hard to be honest with yourself as well. Even, I think it's only since being fully out of prep now, and I'm definitely fully not like that anymore, do I recognize, whereas in the time, it's so hard to recognize it in yourself. Which is part, like, it's a double-edged sword. And I guess it's why having a coach or people around you can really, really help in those situations. But there's definitely a lot of the disordered habits and things you do to get into staging condition are requirements, which is unfortunate, but they are requirements of it. You do have to be careful coming out. And like you said, lots of people do struggle with coming out. And I think either they end up binging and going completely the other way, or they end up really trying to stick in this lean position. And there's the middle ground, and it's so individual. And I think that's something I've learned also from competing and actually coaching others, in that there's so many different people respond so differently to it. So yeah, it's something to be aware of, and I think the awareness is building, which is awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I agree. Yeah, I'm big on awareness, mindfulness. I think it's, you know, hugely helpful. And you mentioned about kind of other people there, and I wondered actually, because I know, see, Charlotte is not interested in kind of, you know, competing. Obviously, you know, supports you and things like that, and you know, obviously, you do have a lot of friends that kind of are. And I was wondering if you think it kind of is important actually to have kind of people around you that aren't only into bodybuilding, you know, to have that kind of balance, particularly in like the off season.
Yeah, I think I'd scare myself to think what I'd be like if I didn't have Charlotte, because she really does help kind of center me, ground me, almost open my eyes to the fact that there's a lot more to life than just bodybuilding. It's very easy to go all in on that kind of on a physique sport, whether it might be. There's plenty of information out there. You can kind of train for it all the time. There's so many different supplements you can start digging into. If you really want to center your life around nutrient timing, sleep, and everything, and just forget anything else that's out there, I think it's about the only sport that you can do that with, because other ones, like you play on the field, yeah, nutrition's part of it. And I mean, serious athletes, obviously there's a lot to it, but even when we look at maybe, I don't know, professional footballers and stuff, it's not quite the same as bodybuilding, where it is your lifestyle. Often people talk about it's a lifestyle, and that is what it is. And I think it can take you the wrong way. And I don't think kind of all these actions that you try and be optimal with and everything, I think it actually probably sends you to a position of not optimality, because you can't fully switch off or de-stress. So I think, yeah, having people like Charlotte and a lot like no one else in my family are at all into it. And I have a best friend who he doesn't really train much, and he's just vaguely into it, but they help make me realize that there is more in the world. There's more things out there, and they definitely, yeah, send to me. I think it would be tough if everyone was doing exactly what I was doing. I think maybe when you're in that, you may love it, but you may regret it after many years, and you look back and think, wow, that's all I did with my time was literally eat, train, sleep, and talk about it.
Yeah. No, I think that's great, because I do feel there is sometimes this idea that, like, surround yourself with people who are like-minded. You're the average of, what is it, the five people around you and all this.
Yeah.
And I sometimes, although I get where that's coming from, if you've got very negative people around you, clearly that's not going to be a good thing. But I sometimes think, I don't know if that's the intention, but the way it gets interpreted is sometimes like everyone has to be like you, have the same interests as you and all that kind of thing. And I think, what it seems like you found is actually having people that aren't into that. You have other things in common, with them, but not, not the kind of the bodybuilding. And actually that's a really kind of helpful thing to help you stay balanced.
Yeah, because, when we're realistic about it, for most people who compete, it's never going to be an income. It's never going to be anything more than a trophy. It's never going to be kind of the most important things that happen in your life. Kind of marriage, children, traveling. These are all going to be bigger deals, I think, when you're kind of in your later years, and not kind of some trophy that you picked up along the way. So I think it is important. And I think you're completely right. I think I often see people, and there is a middle ground there where, yeah, you don't want people in your life who are like bringing you down, but you don't also want to become completely isolated and like dogmatic in your thinking, even, or like really closed off to the rest of the world. You can see this all over, like not just in like physique sports, but you see it even in like, I don't know, politics and things, where they just don't even want to know what other people are saying.
Yeah.
Completely put themselves in one dogmatic hole, which, yeah, is really sad, because I can see the allure to it, but you really hold yourself back and you hold everyone else back by doing it.
Yeah, I completely agree. Yeah, and I think you do see that, we see that, like you say, in the fitness industry, everyone's got a little camp and stuff like that, but in other industries and things like that, as well. So yeah, no, I agree. I think it's hugely important to kind of expose yourself to different kind of perspectives, and just remind yourself of the kind of bigger picture of stuff, and like you say, I think not even only if you're a competitor, but I think having, this kind of real just focus on kind of the gym and, what you're eating and stuff like that, it doesn't allow you to focus on all these other things. And like you say, obviously that's what's required for the stage, right? The stage is not the time for balance, right? That goes out the window there, because that's what you obviously need to do. But I think, if you are a competitor, if you're not making sure that actually the rest of your life, is still happening as well, because I think it can be easy to become quite, fixated on this stuff, so yeah, great. So Yeah. No, I think this has been really good. I think we've had a really good conversation about you as a coach, as a competitor, and things like that. And I think this will be really insightful for people, actually. Either competitors or ones who want to compete, or perhaps those who don't, but actually maybe they've got a bit more of an understanding of it. Because, like I said, I think there are some people that don't quite understand what goes into competing. And actually, like you've said, actually for a lot of people, there is actually sometimes a deeper reason for it. You know, it's not necessarily a sort of superficial kind of thing.
Yeah. So thank you so much for having me on. I've really enjoyed talking.
Oh, good. Yeah. No, this has been great. And I think we'll maybe do a follow up at some point in the future. That would be good. So, where is the best place for people to find you?
Cool. So revivestronger.com, you can probably find everything, I think. Most things should be there. The podcast is there, and we are on all the Revive Stronger podcasts. If people are really into, like, if they found bodybuilding like really fascinating, I mean, that's what that podcast is, or specifically on kind of physique sports, pretty much.
Yeah.
Fat loss, muscle gain, competing. So they can find that out. I'm really blessed to be able to talk to some of the best minds in that area. And then also, I'm probably most active at Revive Stronger on Instagram. I just really like that platform for some reason. But any other place like Facebook, Revive Stronger, that's also where we can be found. Don't use Twitter or anything else. Basically, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube is about where you'll find us.
Great. Yeah. And I'll make sure all of those are in show notes as well. And is there anything particularly that you've got kind of coming up that you wanted to mention, or anything you want to direct people to?
Now you've said that, I really feel like we should. We definitely have things in the pipeline for next year. So anyone who follows us will know Mike Israetel. Yeah. He will be making another appearance next year in London with potentially more of his crew. So that'll be super exciting. And then we have something in the works with Cliff Wilson, who is a well-known bodybuilding coach, who will probably be coming over later next year as well. And we'll keep plugging out podcasts and hopefully maybe some ebooks next year. We just want to make sure that they're really useful, unique, and not just copies or kind of just repeated information, if that makes sense. I think Emma, you'll know exactly what we mean, but hopefully we have some new content to come out there as well.
Great. So everyone, keep your eyes peeled for that. So again, thank you so much for your time, Steve. This has been really, really enjoyable. And I'm sure we will do a follow-up at some point in the future.
Perfect. I'm game. Thank you very much.
Okay, bye. I hope you enjoyed the podcast today. I'd really appreciate it if you took 2 minutes and just gave me a review, positive or negative. I'd love to find out what you enjoyed, what you didn't, so that I can put together the best possible podcast. And it also helps it to go up in rankings so that other people can discover the podcast too. Thank you.